Picture this scenario. Your marketing team is in the break room, popping champagne, celebrating a campaign that just pulled in 1,000 brand new leads.
Oh, that sounds like a dream, right?
You would think so. But down the hall, your sales team is absolutely pulling their hair out. They're complaining that they've spent the last 3 days dialing numbers, and you know, not a single one of those people actually has the budget or authority to buy anything. Welcome to the deep dive.
Yeah, that is a painfully common reality for a lot of companies.
It really is. So today, we are decoding one of the most common reasons B2B revenue programs massively underperform. We're looking at the dangerous, incredibly expensive confusion between two totally distinct functions, demand generation and lead generation.
Right, they're not the same thing.
Not at all. And we're drawing our roadmap today from a really insightful 2026 breakdown by Lauren Popek from Reach Marketing.
Yeah, the reach marketing piece is fascinating because B2B buyers today, they're operating entirely in the shadows.
Just shadows.
Yeah, we are talking about buying committees that spend months independently recognizing their own operational problems. They're comparing vendors, having these intense closed-door internal debates.
Right, all happening secretly.
Exactly. This is happening long before they ever allow a sales representative to know they even exist.
Yeah.
So the goal for our analysis today is to really map out the mechanics of how you actively guide a buyer through that invisible journey. Without scaring them off.
Okay, let's unpack this, because before we can fix a broken marketing funnel, we need to completely redefine the terminology here.
Absolutely.
Like, the standard playbook for the last decade has been arguing over top of funnel versus bottom of funnel tactics,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's the classic debate.
But Popek's research argues we need to throw that out entirely and focus on this concept of intent. I was actually thinking about how to visualize this.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
So demand generation feels like hosting a massive, incredible neighborhood block party. You want everyone to know you, right? To see that you are the cool, trustworthy, competent neighbor.
Yeah, you're just building community.
Exactly. You don't ask for anything. You just provide value.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, lead generation is waking up the next day, walking door to door, and asking exactly who needs to hire a landscaper.
That's a great way to put it.
You absolutely cannot do the second thing effectively if you haven't already done the first.
I completely agree. And taking that neighborhood analogy a step further into the reality of B2B sales, think of it more like a high-stakes courtroom trial.
Oh, a trial. Okay, how so?
Well, demand generation represents the months of grueling discovery. You are meticulously planting evidence in the jury's mind, establishing precedent, shaping the narrative.
So the foundation is rock solid.
Exactly. Now, lead generation is your closing argument. You can deliver the most passionate, articulate closing argument in the world, but if you haven't laid the evidentiary groundwork,
the jury will just stare at you blankly.
Right. Demand generation creates the conditions for future revenue by building that awareness and preference before direct sales engagement ever begins.
Okay, that makes sense.
And lead generation captures that cultivated interest. It converts anonymous signals into known account records and, you know, actionable next steps.
So the ultimate question you need to ask yourself as you look at your own pipeline is, are you currently trying to capture demand that hasn't actually been created yet?
Because trying to deliver a closing argument without any evidence is just a fast track to losing the case.
Exactly. Since demand generation has to happen chronologically first in the buyer's mind, we really need to look at how it shapes their perspective without ever explicitly asking for a credit card.
Right. The mechanics of when to deploy demand generation really depend heavily on the friction in your market.
Like when a product is really complicated.
Yes, it becomes absolutely critical when a product category is complex or widely misunderstood. Think about an enterprise software solution that requires changing a company's entire daily workflow.
Yeah, a buyer won't just click a buy now button for that.
Definitely not. It is also essential when the buying committee includes multiple conflicting departments. You know, IT wants security, finance wants cost cutting, end users just want a friendly interface.
So many moving parts.
Yeah. You also have to lean heavily on demand generation when buyers don't even recognize the financial costs of their own problem. Like, if a company is losing 20% of its operational efficiency to bad data, but leadership just assumes, well, that's how our industry works.
Right. Pitching them a solution is useless at that point. They need education before they need a salesperson.
Exactly.
They have to show them the math on what they're actually losing. And the assets for this, according to the source, are educational articles, thought leadership, deep dive webinars, original industry research.
A bit top tier content, yeah.
But I have to challenge the reality of executing this in today's corporate environment. I mean, in a 2026 economy where CFOs are ruthlessly cutting budgets and demanding immediate ROI.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
Yeah. Telling your boss, hey, trust me, they are reading our ungated PDFs and building silent affinity for our brand, that just isn't going to fly. How does a marketing team actually justify spending heavily on a long game strategy like this without getting fired?
What's fascinating here is that demand generation is historically undercredited in standard tracking software precisely because of that long game.
It's just hard to measure.
Yeah. Very. Let's look at the actual mechanism of a B2B purchase. A buyer might read an in-depth article you published in, say, January.
Okay.
Then in March, they hear your company mentioned favorably by a peer at a conference. In May, they attend a webinar you host on industry trends.
Still no direct sales contact.
Right. Then finally, in June, they type your company's name directly into their browser, go to your site, and book a meeting.
And the attribution software simply logs that as direct traffic, giving zero credit to the 6 months of education that actually earned the meeting.
Which is exactly why relying solely on short-term tracking dashboards breaks your entire revenue system. Because the final action looks simple, leadership assumes they can just cut the educational budget and focus only on capturing direct traffic.
Wow. So to survive that CFO scrutiny, your demand generation requires incredibly strict positioning. Its impact has to be undeniable when sales finally does talk to the prospect.
Yes, and Popick outlines four distinct positioning questions you absolutely must answer in the market to do this. First, who is this for?
Right, which prevents broad, unfocused messaging that just wastes ad spend.
Exactly. Second, what exact problem does it solve?
Making irrelevance immediate.
You got it. Third, why does this matter right now? This is the mechanism of urgency, because if you can't explain why they must fix the problem today rather than, you know, next quarter, the deal will just stall indefinitely.
Oh, we see that all the time. Deals just sitting in the pipeline.
Yeah. And finally, why is your company credible? This systematically reduces the perceived risk for the buyer's internal champion who actually has to stick their neck out to recommend you.
Okay, but building all that trust and answering those positioning questions, it creates a massive new vulnerability.
It does.
If you spend 6 months successfully convincing a buyer they have an urgent problem that needs solving, but you don't have a highly optimized mechanism to catch them when they're finally ready to raise their hand,
they will take all that education straight to your competitor.
Exactly. So how do we actually catch them? That brings us into the hardcore science and mechanics of lead generation.
Yeah, lead generation is where the abstract influence of demand creation becomes a very measurable, structured process. This is the realm of demo requests, consultation forms, targeted event registrations.
The stuff sales loves.
Right. But there is a lethal trap here that completely distorts a company's perception of success.
Yes. The Reach Marketing Research had a striking point on this that just changes the entire paradigm of how we view marketing ROI. Measuring success by sheer volume creates negative value.
Negative value. Let that sink in.
A campaign that produces 1,000 low-fit leads actually costs the company money. You are paying really expensive account executives to dial dead numbers, craft personalized emails for people with literally no authority, and it clogs up your CRM, which just destroys team morale.
It's exhausting for the sales team.
Conversely, a campaign that produces just 40 highly relevant leads from target accounts is what actually drives the pipeline.
And because the defining characteristic of modern lead generation is qualification logic.
Okay, tell me more about that.
You must systematically evaluate the fit, the buyer's role, their seniority, the account size, and their current buying stage. And perhaps the most crucial mechanism here is disqualification.
Disqualification.
Yeah. Strong lead generation requires ironclad, shared definitions between marketing and sales. Both departments must agree on the exact criteria for throwing a lead in the trash.
Throwing it in the trash.
Yes. Sometimes the most profitable thing you can do with a form fill is disqualify it instantly so it never becomes a distraction for your sales team.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The research introduces this concept of buyer signal matching. This is pure behavioral psychology.
Well, this is my favorite part.
You have to perfectly match the friction of your offer to the buyer's current level of intent. Yeah. I mean, I know so many companies that just slap a book a demo button on every single page of their website, and then they wonder why their conversion rate is terrible.
Because offering a hard sales demo to someone reading a top-level blog post is like demanding a marriage proposal on a first date.
Exactly. It's way too much too soon.
It causes immediate psychological friction and just a guaranteed bounce.
Mm-hmm.
Popic provides a highly structured framework for matching these signals. Like, if a buyer's digital signal is simply reading broad educational content, they are firmly in the learning phase.
Okay.
So the matching lead generation offer should be extremely low friction. Think a newsletter subscription, an invite to a broader webinar, or maybe an ungated trend report.
Okay, but what if we can see they are moving deeper into the weeds? Let's say their digital behavior shows they are actively comparing different solution approaches.
Well, if they're comparing approaches, the intent level has heated up to the evaluation phase.
Mm-hmm.
So the matching offer must help them weigh those options. You offer a functional checklist, maybe a self-serve ROI calculator, or a really detailed product explainer video.
Right.
If they progress even further and start reviewing, like, implementation details or API documentation, the intent is hot. You offer a technical consultation or a highly specific integration guide.
And the ultimate signal. What if the analytics show multiple individuals from a high-priority target account repeatedly visiting the pricing page or the core services page over, say, a three-day period?
That is the exact moment you deploy the closing argument.
Boom.
That specific buyer signal matches a direct demo offer, a custom quote request, or proactive account-based sales outreach. You only introduce the high friction of a sales conversation when the buyer's intent is actually burning hot enough to sustain it.
Wow. Knowing how to deploy both of these engines, right, creating the demand in the shadows and then capturing it when the signals match, it brings us to the obvious challenge of execution, because these two functions will actively collide if you don't orchestrate them properly.
They collide because they fundamentally compete for the buyer's attention.
Hmm.
If your strategy leans too heavily into lead generation too early, you aggressively exhaust your total addressable market.
Because you're just annoying them.
Right. You are demanding 30-minute discovery calls from professionals who do not yet understand the financial cost of their problem and have zero trust in your brand.
Yeah, that's a quick way to get blocked.
Conversely, if you run massive demand generation campaigns without a frictionless conversion path, you are just running a charity.
A charity, yeah.
You educate the market, convince them they need software, and then your competitor, who has a highly optimized landing page and lightning-fast sales follow-up, captures the revenue that you created.
That is the worst-case scenario. The balance has to shift dynamically based on your market context, though. Like, if you are launching a completely new disruptive category that no one has ever heard of, you have to over-index on-demand generation.
You have to teach them how to think before you can ask them what they want to buy.
Exactly. But if you are selling an established service, like, I don't know, commercial insurance or cloud storage, where there is massive existing daily demand, your resources should aggressively lean into lead generation to capture the people who are actively searching today.
That makes total sense.
But this brings up the most contentious debate in B2B marketing.
Oh, boy. The gating dilemma.
The gating dilemma. If I know my team just spent 3 months producing a brilliant 40-page educational guide, shouldn't I put an email form in front of it? I mean, don't I deserve a lead in exchange for that value?
The mechanism of gating content is essentially a transaction of trust, and Reach Marketing strongly cautions against overusing it.
Why is that?
Because when you put a form in front of broad educational content, buyers know exactly what happens next.
Oh, they know they're getting spammed.
Yep. They know giving you their email means being entered into an aggressive, automated 7-step sales cadence. And because they want to avoid that friction, they will simply bounce, go back to Google, and find a competitor who offers the exact same education for free.
So true.
Gating your core educational material severely throttles your demand generation engine because you are actively preventing your own ideas from spreading.
You are building a 10-foot fence around your own block party and then wondering why no one is dancing.
That is exactly the risk. B2B content should only be gated when the utility of the asset overwhelmingly justifies the transaction.
Like what?
You gate proprietary tools, custom benchmarking assessments, exclusive data sets, or really complex interactive templates. Basically, you gate utility, you ungate education.
Gate utility, ungate education. I love that. Mm-hmm. But to maintain this delicate balance between letting ideas flow freely and systematically capturing intent, you have to rely on metrics. But tracking these two completely different motions requires vastly different dashboards.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at the wrong numbers will cause you to pull the plug on winning campaigns.
Yeah, you cannot manage what you do not accurately measure. And the highest performing revenue teams run dual reporting tracks. Demand generation and lead generation tell entirely different stories about the health of your business.
Let's break down the actual metrics then. If a marketing director is trying to prove their demand generation engine is working, what should they be putting on the dashboard for the executive team?
For demand generation, you evaluate the shadow funnel.
Okay.
You track target account engagement. Like, are the specific companies you want to sell spending time on your site? You look at direct traffic growth, branded search volume, the depth of content engagement, and total influence pipeline.
And what's the trap to avoid there?
The critical trap is measuring these efforts by immediate form conversions. If you run a brand awareness podcast and judge its success by how many people immediately click a link and book a demo, you will falsely conclude the podcast is a failure.
Right, because it's measuring the foundation by looking at the roof.
Mm-hmm.
But when we pivot to lead generation, the math becomes highly transactional.
Very transactional. Lead generation metrics must be ruthlessly tied to revenue velocity. You track the qualified conversion rate on your landing pages. You track the cost per qualified lit.
Okay.
But most importantly, you track the MQL to SQL rate, which is how many marketing qualified leads actually get accepted by the sales team as sales qualified leads.
Yes.
And the danger here is evaluating success based on raw lead volume without a qualitative review.
That MQL to SQL conversion rate is usually ground zero for the turf war between marketing and sales, isn't it? Marketing says, hey, we sent you 500 leads. Why aren't you closing them? And sales says, because 400 of them were college students downloading a template.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the only way to end that turf war is adopting a philosophy of directional attribution rather than absolute attribution.
Directional attribution. Well, meaning what exactly?
Well, the buyer journey is fundamentally chaotic. A single prospect might listen to a podcast, then see a LinkedIn ad 3 weeks later, then ask a former colleague for a recommendation, read an ungated case study, and then finally type your URL into their browser to request a quote.
So what does this all mean? It means the ultimate goal of tracking all these complex digital signals is to make better strategic business decisions, not to achieve perfect accounting where you assign 100% of the credit to the last Google ad they clicked.
Precisely. It forces revenue teams to realize they are running a relay race, not a 100-meter dash. Demand generation and lead generation are not competing theories. They are deeply codependent partners.
But they only function if the entire organization uses the same definitions.
Exactly.
Let's pull all of this together. The core architecture of a successful B2B revenue program relies on separating your actions. Demand generation creates the intent. It's the discovery phase, the education, the invisible influence. Lead generation captures that intent. It's the closing argument, the qualification logic, the direct capture. If you don't mandate shared definitions between your marketing and sales departments, the exact same digital interaction can be viewed as a massive win by the marketer and a total waste of time by the sales rep.
It's so true. And you know, knowledge is only valuable when you apply it to your own reality. So I highly encourage you to open up your own company's CRM or pipeline dashboard today and diagnose your specific bottleneck.
Yeah, take a hard look at the numbers.
Do you currently have a high volume of leads coming in, but the quality is terrible and the close rate is abysmal? If so, you have an upstream demand problem. You need to stop gating your content and start building actual trust so buyers can filter themselves out before they talk to sales.
And on the flip side.
On the other hand, do you have incredible brand awareness, everyone loves your content, but your inbound inquiry rate is flat? If that's your reality, your lead generation capture paths are either full of friction or just missing entirely. You have to diagnose the actual illness before you prescribe the strategy.
That is such great advice. And I want to leave you with one final concept to mull over as you audit your own pipeline, building on the psychology of everything we've unpacked today.
Let's hear it.
Think about the long-term ramifications of imbalance. If your competitor is successfully capturing the demand you spent 6 months and thousands of dollars creating simply because your lead capture form was too complicated, or conversely, if you were swooping in and capturing your competitor's demand because their sales team took 48 hours to respond to a pricing request.
Oh, that happens all the time.
Right. So who actually owns the buyer's loyalty in the long run? Is it the brand that spent months generously educating them on best practices? Or is it the brand that provided a frictionless experience and simply answered the phone the moment they were ready to buy?
That is a brilliant question.
It is something to seriously think about as you design your buyer's journey. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. We'll see you next time.